Good morning. It's 9 in the morning, which means it's time for Aggie Sports Radio with me as always.
Tristan Boyce, you like that!
And guest starring today with us, because he was in the booth when we got here, Big Time Timmy Jim.
Big Time Timmy Jim!
That would be the real T.O. for you.
It's the real T.O. I forgot you already had a radio name. It's still Big Time Timmy Jim. I'm a little disappointed you didn't make that your Twitter handle, but that would be a really long... We would never tag you in anything because it would take up the entire...
Well, you only got to type like three letters and then it would just autofill.
It would take up like half our character limit. Yeah.
What are you doing today at Big Time Timmy Jim? That's too long.
Maybe that'll be my backup.
That's too long. We got a fun show for you today. There's a lot of action yesterday in the NBA, which is new because usually it's just, well, the Warriors are marching towards the second championship and we don't have anything else to say about that.
But
guess
what? Because this guy right here picked Cavs in six. Did I believe it? No, not a chance. I did not believe it at all. But the Cavs found a way to win. Good for you, Cleveland.
I feel like generally everyone's kind of like, well, all right, good for Cleveland. Like how many people were at the parade?
Somewhere in the neighborhood of like 1.4 million.
Like it's...
And it's a city of how many thousand?
Roughly 350,000, I think, is what I saw.
Yeah, so like there are four times as many people as even live in that city. We're at the parade.
I think one of the bigger stories coming out of this is a lot of people are now having a change of heart when it comes to LeBron and his legacy and all that. Like, this completely kind of rewrites his story and how he's thought of in NBA Finals appearances. Personally, my change of heart has a lot more to do with J.R. Smith and how much I hated him up until the past 4 days and how much I kind of want him to run to president, like... From now, like, I kind of like J.R. Smith.
J.R. Smith hasn't worn a shirt since he took off his jersey after they won Game 7. It's been like a week now.
I don't know if Ben Fordham listens to this show, but the tweet of the year from Ben was, I was going to buy a J.R. Smith jersey, but then I realized a true J.R. Smith jersey is no J.R. Smith jersey.
Shirtless in the middle of Cleveland, held up a sign. It had three boxes, and one said Hillary Clinton, and one said Donald Trump, and one said J.R. Smith. And the J.R. Smith box was checked. I'd vote for him.
I'd vote for him this year.
This year, not every year.
That's some limited options.
Right, not there. In a good political year, I wouldn't vote for him. But right now, I'd vote for him.
There's all kinds of funny things coming out with, like, Matthew Dellavedova looking homeless in the post-game interview. Like, it's so much more enjoyable.
Tell him we treat you good. Tell him we give you three square meals a day. Tell him, Matt.
I'll be honest, watching the Warriors and their fans celebrate a second straight championship would not have been as enjoyable. It probably, like, Draymond Green drunk last year was pretty funny, but J.R. Smith shirtless this year, I would take over that every time.
Absolutely.
Congrats to the Cavs fans. I know there's some on campus. I've seen the LeBron James jerseys a little bit begrudgingly, I think, but good for you. I'm glad that after being an Aggie fan and a Cleveland fan for who knows how long, I'm glad one of your teams could deliver.
They're probably Jazz fans, too.
Oh, that's sad.
But at the same time, the Jazz just, I'd say, hit a home run. I like George Hill. Okay, I'd say hit, like, a roped double that scored two runs.
It's at least a solid double. Yeah, RBI double.
It's a two-run double.
This is, my understanding, I hope I get this right, it was the number 12 pick in the first round for George Hill. And yes. Maybe, was there anything else
there, like,
thrown
cash
in there to sweeten
or
it?
Or?
I think that's it. Teague,
just straight across?
Teague went to Indiana. And,
okay.
So, three-team trade, yeah. But, okay.
Yeah, I think Utah, according to a lot of national writers and... We discussed it earlier. Like, we kind of figured Utah kind of comes out as the winner in this trade.
Well, the Jazz were a 41, I think, win team last year in the low 40s. And that's with a whole bunch of injuries, just a hole at point guard, because Exum went down before the season and didn't really have much going on there until they traded for Shelvin Mack late in the year.
Mm-hmm. Shelvin Mack, destroyer of Blazers.
Well, and we talked about this, too. The Jazz... missed the playoffs by...
They tied for the eighth spot and just lost the tiebreaker.
They lost the tiebreaker, so they missed by, like,
they lost
a quarter
that
of a game
at the end of the year. That was brutal.
Yeah. But the Jazz in the East, we think, win a playoff series if they get the 7 seed somehow.
Oh, they're probably...
Hello.
They're probably a top 4 team in the East, though I think with the George Hill trade now, I think they're a top five team in the West.
That's the number that I keep hearing thrown around and seen on Twitter. And so I want to discuss this for a minute because I want to know which spot people think they're taking from Western Conference teams this year. Probably Portland is the most popular opinion because popular way – like Blazers way overachieved this last year. I'll be the first to admit. But they're also going to land Dwight Howard in free agency.
Logan is drinking the Dwight Howard team. Kool-Aid.
Wait, no. We all know after the other trade yesterday that Dwight Howard's going to end up in New York with Carmelo and
Derrick Rose. Oh my gosh, could you imagine a lineup of
And they will be the 2011 NBA champions.
No, but they might get back to the playoffs again.
Yeah.
They could with the way they're set up now. They've got Porzingis, Carmelo, if Derrick Rose, maybe scenery helps him.
They have Derrick Rose, but they also might have a shell of Derrick Rose.
The problem is, and I love D. Rose, and I hope that he gets healthy, and I'd love to see him do well in New York. But the problem that the Knicks have now is that Porzingis is the future of that franchise. Carmelo's in his early 30s. Rose has,
Carmelo's only in his early 30s? He's been playing for like 60 years.
He started
years.
Playing like 19.
Well, he came out with LeBron.
Yeah.
And he played. He was a year older than LeBron because he played a year of
Because he played a year at Syracuse.
I'll
take advantage of the opportunity to drop a mention of my alma mater, Syracuse, you know, back when they won the title in 2003.
It's easy to remember Melo started young because when you look at, like, his first couple years in the league, he looks like Nicholas Batum. He's just a head on, like, a body that doesn't match.
But he's stacked, Melo.
Back to what we were talking about. Porzingis, I think, is the future of that franchise. So you've got Carmelo, who's aging. He's got, you know, 4 to 5 more seasons left, maybe. You've got Rose, who's got the injuries, kind of a shell currently of his former self. Maybe he can regain that, maybe not. But those are two high-touch people in that offense. And you're taking all those touches now away from Porzingis. And how's that going to affect his growth and that team going forward? Because I think he's the future, and they're potentially their future star and best player.
Yeah.
Well, maybe Rose turns into a lot more of a true pass-first point. Like, I don't know. MVP Derrick Rose is not a pass-first point guard. But maybe he kind of turns into that and facilitates a lot. And you can't really double-team anybody the way they're spaced like that. You double-team Carmelo. Porzingis is wide open. He can hit that shot. You double-team Porzingis. Carmelo's still got it.
Oh, yeah, he can still shoot it. His offense is not an issue.
No. Yeah, it's the poor man's aging butt.
Yeah,
Father Time always wins.
I think purely out of being an Eastern Conference team, I think they probably should make the playoffs next year, especially if they keep on making moves, especially if they land a Dwight Howard type guy. But that's not how you rebuild a team for the long term, obviously. They've got aging stars and then one young guy, and I don't really see... Like, I feel like Boston is doing, like, the full rebuild and trying to get themselves back to where they can be a consistently good team. And the Knicks are constantly just trying to pull the trigger on big free agency moves. Because they're New York, and anybody that'll bring in fans and make them fun to watch for a year or two is worth going after.
Speaking of fans, I've seen that a trade between the Suns and the Jazz got shot down. The Suns wanted to send Bledsoe and a pick for Hayward. And I'm seeing a bunch of people saying that the Jazz should have pulled the trigger on it, which I would say that Bledsoe and Hayward are, like, Hayward's better than Bledsoe, but maybe with the pick that evens out. But Hayward sells tickets here. Like, everybody loves Gordon Hayward.
Well, not only that, but the Jazz are on the precipice of being out of the building stage and into the competing stage. And making that trade would just set them back another year, maybe two, getting back to, like, getting draft picks and... like trying to progress them to where they're stars. And Hayward might be, I have to be careful with this, to be safe, because I haven't actually thought about this until now, he might be one of the three most underrated players in the league. Underrated guy.
Yeah, he's extremely talented. I don't know. I don't think he is necessarily an all-star, like, to be the guy. I don't know that I want him being the guy that takes the last shot, or he's the guy that's going to make the difference in carrying a team to the playoffs, but he's a very good, near all-star caliber player, definitely a starter.
He's definitely not a perennial all-star, but I would be surprised if he doesn't have 2 or 3 all-star game appearances.
He may have a couple all-star seasons for sure. He's one of, only a handful of people in the league that averaged like 15 points a game and I don't know, like 7 rebounds.
He's really well rounded. Yeah.
I think he suffers from stat sheet pretty well. He's not all-star caliber in a lot of people's eyes, and so I think people will generally just see him as, well, he's the Jazz's best player.
Well, yeah, but he's...
But they say that in, like, a negative... Like, yeah. Well, he's the best player on the Jazz. Like, he is the best player on the Jazz, and the Jazz have a pretty talented roster this year.
If we want to get super generalized, he plays small forward in a league where he has to go against people like LeBron James, who he somehow shuts down every time they're in Utah, which is just amazing.
LeBron struggles in Utah.
Yeah,
the Cavs better
it's
hope,
the altitude, man.
The Cavs better hope the Jazz never make a fight in the next 2 or 3 years, because they cannot play in Salt Lake. They're the Lakers to the Rose Garden type.
Oh my gosh, winning, I don't even want to talk about that.
Their winning percentage is like 10% in Utah. And not just the Cavaliers, but any team LeBron's been on. I think that's a fun... That's one of my favorite stats in the NBA. He struggles. The year that Hayward hit a game winner in his face after saying that he was better than LeBron over the summer at League of Legends.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of my favorite things that happened in sports that year.
Well, and then didn't the next time Cleveland was in town, I don't even know who it was. Somebody the Jazz called up on a 10-day contract hit a game winner over him.
I think that was before the Hayward winner.
Oh yeah.
But because there's been a few of them. That was actually before he went to Miami.
Oh yeah.
So that was back in like 2010 or something. Uh-huh. It was Sunday out of Gaines.
Yeah, it was. I knew Sunday out of Gaines hit the game winner.
Well, that's what's the great thing about the Jazz winning over LeBron is there's always like some.
Yeah,
crazy
it's
happens.
Not like Kevin Durant hit a three over him to.
It's always like at the buzzer though. Yeah, the Sunday out of game shot from way beyond 3-point land, and then I think the next year, it was the next year or 2 years later, was when he was in Miami. They were playing in Miami, and Paul Millsap, who wasn't a real legitimate 3-point threat at the time, hit like 4 3-pointers in a row in the fourth quarter. In the final minute and a half, I'm driving home listening to this game, and they tie the game and go to overtime, I think, and the Jazz win in overtime in Miami. And it was because Paul Millsap went off from three.
I was watching the Sunday out of Gaines game with my dad, and I remember the Jazz crowd, when he jumps up on the press table, they acted like they just won the World Cup. And I didn't blame them. Like, I don't say that in like a making fun of them kind of way. I thought it was awesome. No one deserves jumping up on the table more than Gaines in that moment.
Well, I mean, plus, really, like, who's
answer the phone. Fantasy, it's probably Mikey.
Whose fantasy is not to jump on a scores table?
Logan's got to answer the phone. We've got a caller on line one.
Hello, this is Aggie Sports Radio.
So let's go back to Logan's question a minute ago, which took us to the Knicks and then, you know, digressed from there.
Which one is good?
But who will the Jazz potentially replace in the top five, top six in the West if they get to that point?
Golden State's still number one in the West. I think, the Spurs, Manu's going to opt out for free agency, but I bet he still ends up back there on some... I bet Greg Popovich just promises him, like, we'll pay you less money, but you can come sleep at my house or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, people kind of want to write off the Spurs. Because they're old. And
if Curry doesn't have the season he had, Kawhi Leonard could have been the MVP this year. LeBron apparently should have been the MVP this year, but Kawhi Leonard could have been. So I've still got them at 1-2.
And my issue with LeBron has always been that, you know, because of how talented he is and his amazing athletic skills, I feel like his performance in the finals should be his performance fairly
regular
consistent.
Like he could average a triple-double game.
And he doesn't do that. And had the Warriors not had a confluence of things happen to them and been a little boastful and kind of ticked him off to kind of generate that performance, I think they win in 5 games and we don't even see that. But
I wonder,
but that LeBron would be the MVP of the league and the finals every time.
I wonder if
that.
LeBron in the Western Conference, where you have to compete every game to get into the playoffs, is different than LeBron in the East, where Cleveland's a different tier than the whole rest of the Eastern Conference. Toronto gets there sometimes, but not really.
I wish LeBron played in the Western Conference just because I'd be interested to see if he could make it to 7 consecutive finals.
LeBron, come to L.A.
Having to go through that gauntlet in the West.
Get that right out of here. Yeah, I agree. I think this is the year that Oklahoma City overtakes the Spurs, barely. But I think your top three teams in the league, not just the West, are the Spurs and the Cavs and Oklahoma City.
But we're talking about, like, free agency, too. How much longer does Kevin Durant stay in Oklahoma City?
One more year.
Just one more year? And
one
then
more year.
You think he's headed home to Washington?
I think so.
Play for the old Bullets?
No.
He'll stay?
I don't know that he'll stay, but I don't think he's going to go to Washington.
Come to L.A.
Well, no.
We have women.
He's going to go somewhere with talent.
We have Julius Randle.
He's going to go somewhere where he's got a chance to win a title.
Who should have been coach of the year, Luke Walton.
I think he's going to go back to Oklahoma City this year also. But
Nate!
But the news that came out yesterday was that if he opts out this year, Golden State's the front runner.
I think Kevin Durant comes back for another year because then he and Russ are in the same free agency.
I agree.
Cycle, which is why I would be more scared of them than even the Spurs this year. Because I think the Spurs...
And they just came within an epic collapse of beating the Warriors and going back to the finals.
Right.
So
and they were good all season, but their last month of the regular season, which people tend to forget about, they were on pace with the Spurs the whole time.
So you were kind of distracted by the phone, but we were getting back to your question ranking the teams in the West. So
Golden State 1, San Antonio 2, Oklahoma City 3. Maybe that switches... I hate the Clippers. Do we have to put the Clippers at 4?
We do have to put the Clippers on this list.
Do we have to put the Clippers at 4?
I think for one more year. Because I think Dallas is headed in the wrong direction. And I think I don't know what to do with Memphis because we don't actually know what their first team looks like. We saw their JV team for most of this year. Maybe Memphis comes back and surprises everybody and is good again, but I don't think they're top 5. I don't think Houston is going to be Houston might tank this year because they hired the tanking specialist as their new head coach,
Michael D. Anthony,
and Howard's gonna leave. Harden went from like MVP candidate to shacked in a fool winner in like one season. He's got the based gods curse still hanging over him, so he's
thank
not
you
gonna
Lil
do
B.
So I think Houston's headed in the wrong direction. So as much as Portland overachieved this last season, I think because all the other teams that are maybe on the wrong trajectory, Portland and the Clippers stay in the top 5.
I'm gonna say Portland 5, Utah 6, but that could flip flop really easily. You're probably gonna say Utah 5, Portland 6, Tim, and Logan's good. I'm just gonna give it to Portland because they've got the playoff experience and with a really good backcourt and 3 front court players who nobody outside of Portland could name any of them, probably. They won playoff games.
They won a series after... I hate to say this because my brother might listen to it later and it might start a fight. Chris Paul going down, we won that series because Chris Paul couldn't play Deion Lillard anymore. Because the first 3 games of that series, Lillard could do nothing. He would get doubled as soon as he crossed half court.
He looked like Steph Curry in the finals.
He
really did.
Because he got his points by the end of the game, like Curry in the finals. Like he ended up getting 19, 20 points. But he would dump it to Plumlee, who's standing on the foul line. Plumlee has no offense, and so he would kick it out to Allen Crabbe or Al-Farouq Aminu, who are the players no one else could name unless you happen to be a Portland fan.
Dude, you know Al-Farouq Aminu is my boy.
Is he?
Yeah. Didn't I text you like every time he hit a 3?
Well, yeah, you texted me once.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
He took that corner 3 like 20 times in the first 3 games of that series.
And he hit zero of them.
Maybe once. So, yeah, so that series changed when Paul went out and Lillard could move around a little bit more freely. I do think they make a run at a big man and get one in free agency this year just because they've got all the money. It probably won't be Dwight Howard. We'll probably overpay somebody else to come in. But anyone who can run the pick and roll in that offense and take the pressure off of Lillard and McCollum, CJ McLillard, as we call that duo, it would be a big... And the fact that they got as far as they did last year just based on good chemistry tells me that they could be not... I don't think they're a championship contender this year, but I think they're a team nobody wants to play in the playoffs just because they're going to be a pesky team to get rid of.
I think they're a team on the rise. I think they're definitely in that 4-6 range again. I think the Clippers, even though they've been pretty consistent, they seem to be slowly imploding a little bit.
I hope so.
And I always, you know, I always kind of liked the Clippers. I wanted them to do well because they were so terrible.
They were like the
Cleveland Browns of the NBA.
They were worse.
They had the worst ownership because they would draft all-stars, know they were all-stars, and just sit them on the bench for 3 years and then send them somewhere else.
And so when they first started to kind of put this all together and be pretty good, I was like, oh, cool, the Clippers. But
then the Kia commercial started.
Yeah, that was probably it.
The State Farm commercials with Chris Paul and Kevin Love and Damian Lillard and Kevin Garnett.
One of the better tweets I've seen was those commercials had to make Kevin Love a teenager to differentiate him from the State Farm agent. Otherwise, it'd be too confusing.
So I wouldn't be surprised to see the Clippers take a step back. Like you said with the Grizzlies, I think they're kind of headed that same direction, Dallas as well. And so, yeah, I think the Jazz, I think Portland, definitely in play there in that 4-6 spot.
I'd say the 1-3 is Golden State. Well, the 1's Golden State. The 2-3 is some variation of San Antonio, OKC. The 4-6 is Clippers, Portland, Utah in some order. 7-8 could literally be anybody.
I think Utah's position in that tier of teams has everything to do with whether Gordon can graduate to that level of player who can take over a game or not, because Clippers have those guys
and how well George Hill can mesh and facilitate that offense.
Portland's got Lillard, who really can win a series for a team. The Clippers have a host of people that, even though they're getting older, Chris Paul might still low-key be the best all-around point guard in the league.
Let's talk about what George Hill brings to the Jazz a little bit, because we've talked to the Jazz, even with all their injuries and issues that they had last year. They were a 40-win team, just missed the playoffs. Tony Jones, who's the beat writer for the Salt Lake Trib, tweeted out yesterday. Used to cover the Aggies, so we like to throw him some love. He tweeted out yesterday that he thinks the Jazz have the potential to flirt with 50 wins this year. Which is only 8 or 9 more than they got last year.
Nine from last year.
It's the West is my problem. Well, it's the West with teams that are getting worse, I guess.
How many, for I don't know how closely you guys follow Jazz, but how many last-second losses did they have last year?
A lot. Like, on pace with Oklahoma City for, like, crushing fourth-quarter-ending type losses.
And now you're bringing in a point guard, a pretty talented point guard, who has playoff experience, plays lockdown defense. You put him out there with a team that's already, when healthy, been the best defensive team in the league.
George Hill can defend as well as anybody else in the league.
And he's a career, Steph like, Curry. 47% three-point shooter or something like that.
This is a lesson that I had to learn as a Seahawks fan when we picked up Jimmy Graham. you tend to think in the offseason that everything you did well the previous season, you will continue to do well. And then when you add in a guy that's like an all-star type guy, it'll just boost you that much further up the ladder.
As a Cowboys fan, that's every offseason. So I understand what you're saying.
So, you know, the Jazz did the four games I saw in person last year, Utah play, they can go on stretches where they outscore a team like 18-0, but they can do the exact opposite.
The Pelicans game we watched last year, it was like a tie game to start the third quarter, and to start the fourth quarter, it was like a 15-point lead, 20-point lead, something like that.
So and that's, I don't know necessarily if that's coaching or just a mentality thing. Like, there are a lot of things that go on behind the scenes, chemistry wise, that we don't see until they really start playing. Seeing a 10-game improvement in the Western Conference is a leap, and it's not one that I think is impossible for Utah to make, but I it's just as easy for me to see them in the 5 spot as it is seeing them grabbing the 8th spot in the last couple games of the season.
Yeah, they've got to show that they know how to win, they know how to have success, so I think that would be a stretch, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility either, for sure.
But I think chemistry-wise, I think the Jazz have potential to have the best like team chemistry maybe outside of Golden State in the entire league, because there's not really one guy that just demands all the attention on that team. They're all like just pretty chill guys, and George Hill's coming in, and he was behind Paul George and Roy Hibbert when he used to exist in Indiana.
Remember when Roy Hibbert was like the most in-demand center in the league for like a month?
Yeah.
And it was a weird month. And then he was in the playoffs and he didn't score a single point like two straight games.
No, didn't he just straight up not record a single stat in one of those games?
Maybe, I think that might be.
Is that what it was?
Like
no points, no rebounds, no blocks.
I remember watching Sports. It's one of the last times I ever watched Sports Nation because I didn't realize that it was terrible. Colin Coward used to be on it. It used to be funny. That's also before Colin Coward was terrible. But they were talking about Roy Hibbert and just
take that Fox Sports Radio.
Tell us everyone, how you really feel.
Everyone at home had recorded more stats in that game than Roy Hibbert, who played 30 minutes. Yeah, sorry, Colin. Actually, I'm not sorry, Colin.
Oh goodness.
I hope this isn't too abrupt of a subject change, but we actually haven't talked about this on this radio show yet, and it's something that we've talked about a little bit behind the scenes a lot. So I don't mean to spring this on you guys, but how come everybody leaves Aggie Sports? Can we talk about like first Lou and now Bolton and maybe more people from the women's basketball team, like all of a sudden deciding that they want to go on to greener pastures?
Well, I want to compare the Lou Evans situation to the David Collette situation a little bit. I feel like Lou was only ever planning on being here until now. Like, he graduated anyway, graduate transfer, immediately leaving. He was supposed to play the year before and then didn't. Like, they didn't grant him the immediate release from Tulsa or whatever. So he was only ever planning on being here until this offseason, and then he was done anyway. And he graduated and gets a chance to...
I don't think anybody really holds it against Lou, but it's still... It's happened so much, and I think we've talked to this up in the office. We've talked to Tim about this. Like, it's happened so much as becoming a trend and not just an individual.
Well, it's not becoming a trend. It is a trend, it is partially a trend all throughout the NCAA, not just here at Utah State. I think we've had a few, at least to us, higher profile ones especially with David Collette and how that all went down, and a few people that we'd have liked to seen stay, but really for the most part. Like 80% of these people, these players, that end up leaving are getting recruited over, I think, and really, it's either sit on the bench or go find somewhere they can play. Like
Connor Fry went down to UVU. He wasn't going to play. Like, he played great for us that season when everybody was injured, and he was one of my favorite players. But go to UVU. Do your thing down there, because when everybody's healthy up here, you're going to get like a minute a game maybe. And that's kind of how I feel about Henry Bolton. I love H2O Bolton, but he wasn't going to play.
He showed a few flashes when he got some minutes as a freshman, but I think getting Rector in, obviously Kobe McEwen coming in, who's our highest ever rated recruit to
Kobe.
Play point guard.
4-3.
I'm going to say that every time he hits a three.
So he just wasn't going to see the court. And so, I mean, I understand that from his perspective. I understand that from Utah State's perspective, wanting to maybe give that scholarship to somebody else who's going to contribute more. And the same thing probably with Elston Jones. I was a little more surprised by that one because I think he showed flashes. He's developed, and he's a big body, which the Aggies don't have a lot of.
Desperately need.
Right now. But they have brought a few in as well. And so it'll be interesting to see how that all meshes, what the talent level is. It's easy to project that something's wrong with the program, and we have had a change in coaches and, you know, different tweaks to the system here and there from these players that came in under Stu and are now here under Duryea, and Duryea is bringing in his players, and there were some issues the last couple of years with Stu, I think. But so I think it's an issue, and it bears some concern or watching, but I think 70% of these transfers would probably happen anyway.
The women's team one is the one that concerns me.
Yeah, the women's one makes me feel like we just talked about, a lot of times if people aren't starting and they're unhappy in their role coming off the bench, they can find somewhere to go start, maybe at like a slightly lesser tier of a team. But it's weird to me that like Collette and Funda both
Funda went to Florida.
Were unhappy as starters and wanted to go be starters somewhere else.
Well, and the thing, and this is pure like speculation rumor that I heard, but I heard Funda wasn't happy having to like carry the entire offense.
I don't even know that that's speculation. I think we had that confirmed in the story that we ran in the Statesman with quotes from teammates that she did not enjoy having so much pressure on her to deliver every game for the Aggies to be successful.
You're an NCAA athlete. Well, you're supposed to thrive on that.
Well, and not just that, but she was playing alongside 9 freshmen last year, and the team was, if you project...
I think they were the youngest team in the NCAA.
Conservatively, into the next season or two, really last season would have been the only one with that much pressure put on her. She still would have been the key cog in the offense and everything, but people came along that we weren't expecting to have start that ended up being good players by the end of the year. Rachel Brewster just kind of came out of nowhere. She actually came out of Australia, but really just came out of nowhere and showed up as being a good player. And that, yeah, I don't know. If you looked forward to next season, you could see this team easily being a competitive team, and I guess she just wasn't into that. But it just kind of, yeah, it's something that's been eating at me for a while because I don't think there's anything deep, dark going on in the basketball program. It's just kind of didn't we used to be a fun destination to be at? Mountain West Conference, play in the Spectrum. You know, we could discuss all day about whether the Spectrum is what it was, but I don't know.
I think with basketball, too, both men's and women's, it's more noticeable when players leave because you've only got 12 or 15 or whatever, sure. and 7 or 8 that contribute that everybody knows. Whereas football, you've got, 75 guys and, 30, 40 that contribute quite a bit. And so when 2 or 3, 4 of those guys transfer, especially if it's a bunch of the players that don't see a lot of time and people don't know, that, I think that just more or less goes unnoticed, yeah. Except by the diehard fans who are really watching the roster and hey, where'd so-and-so go?
Our third string tight end.
We'll see 5 to 10 football players go, every year, but nobody mentions anything about it because it's not as noticeable as these players on the basketball team. But yeah, the Funda one, definitely an interesting situation, concerning, kind of like Colette. You don't want to see these players that are all conference players type potential starters on the teams suddenly transfer.
And just the season before, Mac Williams and Bairstow, who are both probably the two best players on the team, also left, and that's kind of a weird, I don't know, last 2 years in women's basketball specifically, and then just kind of added on by Colette and a couple guys from the men's team. Just a weird situation. You I don't know. Obviously, I'm a homer, but I would think Utah State would be a kind of a good place to play.
Well, especially when they've been showing improvement. When Colette left, they were just coming off a fourth place finish in the Mountain West Conference, which was the highest ever by a second year team in the conference. They were returning all of their starters.
Yeah, we were going to return five starters,
and they were projected to finish third in the conference.
Yeah.
And that's just because
Boise and San Diego, I think we were actually on the same tier as Boise.
I agree.
Yeah, but you give Boise the spot over us because that's where they finished the year before.
Colette this past year with the shooting of Chris and Darius and some of the other guys, I think they would have been a completely different team. But and same with the women's team, they had, even though they were the youngest team in Division I, they had improved off of their finish the year before,
yeah.
and really had an upward looking trajectory going forward next year, especially with some of the other teams in the Mountain West losing some players. And you look at that, they'll probably be in the top half of the Mountain West next year, maybe make a run in the conference tournament. And again, it, at least on paper, a star player leaves, and that's going to set the team back a little bit. So it makes you wonder why, when everything seems to be going in an upward trajectory, why some of these transfers have happened. I think that's the most concerning part of those two specific situations.
Yeah. I feel like I'm a downer now bringing that up to the... I feel like we need to talk
Aggies.
We were
talking about fun things,
I know, we were
Logan.
Talking about NBA.
Boo that guy.
We should talk about Aggie sports for a second on our Aggie sports radio show. And there's not a lot else going on. It's the heart of the off season for most sports. Baseball's
athletics.
Going on. But.
Well, I don't know if this will improve the mood at all. But they did release the conference schedule for men's and women's basketball. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but the Aggies kind of got screwed a little bit.
Thanks, Mountain West.
Yeah, again.
For the fourth year, third year in a row.
What do we have? We have 3 home games.
Are we in our fourth year now?
While everyone's out of town.
Oh, gosh.
So not only 3, so 3 of our first 4 conference games are at home, but they're all when the students are gone. For the holiday
break. We had
the
same thing. Well, it was only 2 of our first 3,
and
but the same thing happened last year.
And it's against 3 of the toughest teams in the conference. I think it's against Boise, San Diego State, and...
Is it Fresno? No, it's...
I haven't seen UNLV, maybe. I haven't seen us play San Diego State in the Spectrum for like three years.
The last time I was in town to watch us play San Diego State was
the Butterfield game.
The Butterfield game. Yeah. Man, I was.
Well, actually, I think that's
Xavier Thames was so good last
year. That was 2013 because we that was the one year where we didn't play them home and home. We just played at their place, and then we played them at home during Christmas break when everyone was home. And then again this year during winter break we're gonna play them at home when nobody's here, and Boise too, probably like kind of just undoubtedly the two perennial heavyweights in the conference we will play without fan support here. Not to say that everyone goes home, but like on a regular weekend, like in Logan, people are all like, I'm going home to Sandy. Like they'll skip football games and go home to like an hour away
to chill on their parents' couch and watch the football game on ESPN3. When you could watch it live with the money you already paid in student fees. You already paid for that ticket. You bought that ticket. You're not even trying to sell that ticket. You're just not going to use it.
You bought season tickets when you enrolled here.
You know that's right.
We'll use them. We're a football school now. Embrace it. We're going to win 6 games this year. Embrace that too.
Hey, that's an improvement.
So here it is. We open conference schedule. Utah State opens December 28th, hosting Boise State. And then...
Everybody will be in town for that one.
That's the season opener. Yes. Yeah.
The homestand also includes games against New Mexico on January 4th and UNLV on January 7th.
When does the semester start? Like the 9th?
It's like the 9th or the 11th.
Oh my gosh. What a joke.
So, Boise State, New Mexico, and UNLV, three of the top 4 teams in the league, probably.
Great games. If we had that many home games in a stretch last year, we might have actually gotten some excitement, like from fans who are like, "Oh, another basketball game! Oh, another basketball!" Like this is consistent. I'm getting used to going.
I've been here. I don't know, Tim. How long have you been at Utah State?
I mean, I grew up here in the Valley, but I was a student here starting in 2004, and then I've been working here since 2014.
So, 04 would have been. During the heart of the WAC era, right? Yeah.
Yeah, they joined the WAC, actually, in 2005, I think.
Oh, right. So that was the end of the Big West era. Logan's been here since 2013. I've been in Logan, except for my mission, since 2008. And I'm just going to reminisce a little about the days that we were in the WAC. I'm glad we're in the Mountain West. I'm glad that the competition's tougher.
Which the WAC back then was a decent league. Nevada was a top 10 team in the WAC.
Nevada was number 9, and we beat them at home. Like, number 9 in the country. But we had Nevada. We had the same Boise State team. We had Fresno State. We had us.
And that's a Fresno State team with Paul George.
Yeah. Who Tyler Newbold absolutely destroyed every game. And I love both of those people. But... I kind of miss it. I don't know. Like, I'm glad we're in the Mountain West, but the WAC was fun because the scheduling was... The WAC did their scheduling better than the Mountain West. Again, the WAC didn't really have a TV deal, so they could just kind of do it however they wanted because they didn't have to. But we had, like, a home game every week. It was nights that the students didn't really have anything going on, so the Spectrum was always packed. It didn't matter, like... The only games that the Spectrum wasn't, like, sold out for were the Gosner games when everybody was gone. But we would have, like, non-conference, like, exhibition games against... There's some school up in Victoria, British Columbia that came and played, like...
Simon Fraser.
Yeah, Simon Fraser. That's exactly who it is. And that game was, like, sold out! In freaking November!
Like, I wonder how much the consistency of having home games has to do with that. Like, not so much fan interest in basketball as much as... Friday night basketball game every Friday night, like.
But I think there's a whole confluence of things that are affecting attendance at not only Aggie games but
sporting
college
general.
Athletics across the country. But going back to some of the angst we were discussing earlier, we at least do get San Diego State at home during when we should be in school on February 15th. So.
Valentine's
Mark
Day
that
game.
On your calendar.
If anybody decides to go on a Valentine's Day date that doesn't include watching that game, I will personally come find you on your date
We're on the radio. Okay.
I will ruin your date. I will throw glasses of wine in your date's face. I don't know what I'll do.
They're going to go heavy on the kiss cam in that game.
If your date doesn't want to go
Don't to, date to
the,
that person.
To the Aggie game, it's probably time to find somebody else to date.
Amen. Amen to
and
that.
This is I'm speaking as someone who's been dumped twice right before Valentine's Day. You need to get out of that relationship. She doesn't need to go to every Aggie basketball. Okay, yeah, she does. But especially that one. A DTR at that game.
Guys, I've never been on the Kiss Cam, and it's been my goal in life. And Taylor and I have been married for 2.5 years now, and we have gone to almost every... There's something amazing that happens when you marry an Aggie fan. And it's like, hey, it's Valentine's Day. What do you want to do? Like, we've got to plan this date. Oh, there's a basketball game tomorrow? Well, what if we go to dinner at 5? Like, we'll have a really nice dinner, and then we'll put our game day shirts on, and we'll go watch the basketball game, and we'll try and get on the Kiss Cam, which I still haven't done yet.
Got to slip the camera guy $5.
I guess.
I
knew the camera guy my freshman year, but...
I never really wanted to be on the Kiss Cam for my first 2 years here, because I was always here with single friends, and I was like, mm-mm, or my sister.
I would have loved that.
And people always think me and my little sister are dating, and I'm like, no, that's not the case. But now, things are different. In fact, the girl I'm dating now, we knew we were meant to be when we went to a hockey game on our first date, and she said that BYU's uniforms looked like cheerleading jerseys. Cheerleading uniforms.
I decided
right then she was a keeper. So, I might have to get to the camera guy and be like, yo.
We're over here. This is important. Just do it.
She doesn't listen to the show, so we're safe. This is all. Watch, this is going to be the first one. The first time she ever looks up the podcast.
Is that your phone ringing?
She texts me distracting things every once in a while, like just funny things she finds on Instagram, just to try to get me like knocked off.
I can't decide if I like being on this show more or just sitting in my office listening and tweeting at you guys.
It's fun to get interaction.
We do like
the
Twitter interaction. Hey, yeah, people, we've still got like 10 minutes left, so if you want to tweet at any of us, at TheRealTO, which is hilarious, by the way.
That's back when TO was actually a football player.
Yeah. Or at Tristan_Boyce1, or at Aggie Sports Radio.
Or at LoganTJ.
I just said that. I really
did.
You didn't even listen to me.
No, I was listening. I was like, you didn't say mine.
I kind of chimed in there while he was going through it.
Okay. I wish I set mine up in high school because my brother said Twitter was like the future, and I was like, okay. And then I didn't use it for like 5 years. But I wish I would have been smart enough to be like the real LoganTJ or something like that. I want a blue check mark by my name by the time I die. That's like a bucket list item for me.
It's important
to be a significant enough figure to get the check mark.
The verified.
It's the tiniest little like affirmation that you did something with your life. Like.
So back to NBA things, because
you want to talk about the Lakers, don't you?
I do a little bit, but no, the draft's today.
Oh, okay.
And I just
you want to talk
tell
about
you guys,
the Lakers, don't you?
Kind of, but in a minute.
So, do you want to draft Brandon Ingram, or do you want DeMarcus Cousins?
Everything I've heard about Cousins is he's a locker room cancer. But then again, Sacramento is just kind of a city that probably actually is a cancer. So maybe he's not. And he's proven, and we've got... What the Lakers are really missing is a center. That's what they're really missing. Because we've got Larry Nance, and he should be playing the four. And we've got Julius Randle, and he should be playing the four. And they were splitting time at the five. And we've got Roy Hibbert, and he should be at home watching the game from his couch.
So far, you're telling me all the Lakers are missing is a center, and you've named off Larry Nance Jr. and who was the other guy?
Oh, Julius Randle.
Julius Randle as the reason that's all the Lakers need?
No, I'm
not buying into this so far.
We've got... So, D'Angelo Russell, who...
D'Angelo Russell.
He'll be okay, but I really like Jordan Clarkson at the two.
I really wish a year ago that the Lakers weren't smart enough to keep Jordan Clarkson around. Because there's like murmurs of maybe moving him, yeah. And I was like, ooh, that's a mistake. He's good.
Anyway, I know that I'm the only person listening or talking about this who cares about the Lakers, so I want to talk about the draft itself. I saw the greatest thing ever on... The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, they had Ben Simmons on, who is projected to be the number one overall pick.
I think the 76ers have actually called Simmons and said, like, get your suit in order with our colors because we're picking you for sure.
Yeah. So he was on the Tonight Show, and because he's going to Philly, Jimmy Fallon brought out like a bunch of cheesesteaks from different places and was like, try this. And they were taste testing them so that he would know, like, this is what it's like to live in Philly. You got to eat the cheesesteaks. You got to love it. Ben Simmons approves of the cheesesteaks. He's going to Philly. Everything's happy.
What do you think, and I meant to ask this earlier, and then we got an Aggie sports stuff. I want, by the end of the summer, what do you think the biggest free agency move will be by a team? Is it the Derrick Rose pickup, or is it something we haven't seen yet? Or is it George Hill? Maybe he gets Utah into like a top four seed.
You know what? I'm going to go the reverse on you. It's Robin Lopez to the Bulls.
Interesting.
No, I'm totally kidding.
I love Robin Lopez. Rest in peace, Benny the Bull.
If you would have said 3 years ago that a trade like involving the two key cogs of the trade would be Derrick Rose on one side and Robin Lopez on the other, you would have been ridiculed. Like, Skip Bayless levels of ridicule would have followed you.
I think the best is still yet to come. There's just, it might even happen today. There's almost every team outside of the top two picks is looking to trade their picks and do something. And some teams, I mean, Boston and Denver, I think, have three first-round picks. Are they really going to pick three new people in the first round? I don't know about it. The Jazz have three second-round picks. They could look to get back in the first round, and they have some assets that people want. They've got 5 point guards now.
Yeah, for real.
They've got to get rid of two of them.
Did Jazz keep Trey Burke, you think?
No, Trey Burke's definitely going to
end up
somewhere
else. They were selling
his
jersey like 30% off for like the second half of the season.
And I think like 70% off on that Dallas game that we went to. Burke's going to be gone, and as much as I liked Shelvin Mack last year, I think he'll probably be gone. He's got the expiring contract that teams covet.
I would like for him and Gordy to just be able to stay together. They've got really good kids. Like, they played together for 4 years before Shelvin Mack even got here when they were Butler? From Butler, Indiana!
Butler, Indiana!
They've got that chemistry. It's fun to watch them play together, but it's a business.
I think Boston is the team that may make the biggest move at some point. They've got the third overall pick and then two more in the first round, like we've talked about. And they were a team that was, what, fourth or fifth?
Yeah.
Fifth, I think, in the Eastern Conference. And they're on the rise. I don't remember how they ended up with that third pick in a trade somewhere. Probably from the Nets, I think.
Yeah, it was that Nets trade for Paul Pierce and
Kevin Garnett. That was such a good trade for Boston.
Yeah, it was. Oh, man.
That was like when the Jazz shipped D. Will to the Nets. The Nets have just struggled.
The
man,
Nets are so bad at
with their trades.
That.
But I think Boston could really make some noise because they're right there on the verge of being a contender in the Eastern Conference.
I watched The Flash now because my job is boring and I Netflix at work. And there's a thing called Earth 2 in The Flash where there's like an alternative reality. And I feel like on Earth 2, D. Will is like a 3-time-in-a-row all-star as a net. Like, there's a version of the NBA where he's one of the premier point guards in the league for, like, 3 to 5 years. Instead of being, like, on
the
cusp.
Well, he was.
Like,
when he played for the Jazz.
He was at the Jazz, but it was never, like, you know how in the NBA and in the NFL, like, whoever the kind of just the best player is, that they have the year where the whole season they just get hyped up because they're just the best player that year. I think D-Will could have had one of those. Chris Paul had his time. Everyone was still like LeBron, Kobe, but Chris Paul kind of had his time in the spotlight where he's like, he might be the best point guard in the league.
Well, there was a legitimate debate for a couple of years whether it was D. Will or Chris Paul, and especially because they went back to back. I think the Jazz picked D. Will third, and the Hornets picked Chris Paul fourth in that draft in 2005 or whenever it was.
Yeah.
But there was a legitimate debate there for a couple of years.
Yeah, there's a version where Williams is in the All-Star game. Premier, like, gets talked about. He's on talk shows all the time. Like, maybe, like, an MVP vote here or there, like, type of guy. And instead, he's just disappeared.
Let's just take a minute and remember how good the Jazz were with D. Will and Carlos Boozer.
Can we not? Because they won all four games against the Blazers 2 years in a row because D. Will was just running you know the layup drill in, like, high school basketball where you have to get, like, 100 layups in a minute and everybody's, like, that was what it looked like. He's just running from end to end of the floor, just like, boop, boop. Like, he never took a shot outside of 2 feet from the basket. And we couldn't do anything about it. He's going 35 a game against us. It was terrible. And I was in Rexburg during those years. And everyone in Rexburg is Utah BYU fans because there's nothing else going on in Idaho except Boise State. And yeah, it was, I got so much. Literally, I had to lean back on like the cruelest of tricks, which was like, well, the Blazers have won a championship. Like, that's all, the only smack talk
I
could
worst.
Say.
I've got a that's buddy that's a Celtics fan, and anytime we would talk Lakers and Celtics, no matter what was going, like, the Lakers could have just beat the Celtics by, like, 70 points. It could have happened like that, and he would have been like, 17 championships, how many do the Lakers have? 16, that's, dude, that's it's one less. Like, and 10 of yours happened when there were, like, four teams in the league.
Like, Bill Russell championships don't actually count anymore. Like, the statute of limitations is worn. It's been...
Is that like BYU's 1984 national title?
Yeah, it. You can count it all you want, but the fact is, they had to
give it
to somebody. It was
against a 6-6 team.
and most BYU fans don't know that the team the next year in 85 was much better. Or at least better-ish.
Much better.
I don't want to get... But yeah, that's... I never want to be that guy that has to pull the championship card, but that was all I had. That was Brandon Roy's knees were already kind of getting shaky. Explosion of the knees was happening in Portland for a couple years there.
Yeah, Portland's had some rough luck there. I mean, because anybody wants to trash talk Portland, they can just bust out Sam Bowie, Greg Oden. Yeah,
everyone always talks about how we passed on Michael Jordan, and no one brings up how we totally passed on Larry Bird, too. We've passed on every legend there's been.
Well, I think it's funny, too, that people... talk about, was Bowie the first or second pick? Did you guys have first or second?
I think it was the first pick.
So who had the second? Because they also passed on Michael Jordan.
I don't remember.
Yeah, nobody ever talks about that.
Yeah. Hello, people looking in the radio booth.
It's always so how the Blazers failed so bad.
Well, it's we've had two number one.
Greg Oden was not a bad pick.
No. Oh, people in Portland.
Greg Oden was a terrible pick because Kevin Durant was the next pick.
Everyone knew in Portland, like, Kevin Durant, he's going to be a great scorer. He's going to be great in the NBA. It wasn't that we thought one was going to bust and the other one was going to. Like, we saw both as, like, equal. Like, hey, we can't go wrong here. Sonics can't go wrong here either because they get whoever we don't pick. Like, this is great.
I was big on the KD train, but I also hate Ohio State. So
people don't remember that there was a log jam at that position in Portland.
Like, Portland had four threes.
Yeah, we already didn't know what to do with all of our three guys. That like we were trying to ship off a couple of them and try to figure out what to do. So the roster, like, no matter what it looked like, we would have had to draft KD and then spend the next two or three years drafting an entire new team around, which... in retrospect, maybe we should have done because we've gone through like seven generations of this team in the last 10 years anyway. But people, I mean, you can't imagine. I talked about winning the World Cup earlier as like how the Jazz celebrated the Sundiata Games game. People had Oden painted on their chests. This is not an exaggeration. People rushed. I was at the draft party. People rushed the Rose Garden court when we drafted him because they thought we just brought a championship to Portland. Like, we finally got a rim protector guy who we can run pick and rolls with. That's all we need. Like, we would have picked that guy anyway, even if we wouldn't have had, like, a number one prospect. We would have traded down in the draft just to be like, hey, all we need is the big guy in the middle. Like, we don't need a guy who's going to score 20 points a game. We already have our scores. We got Aldridge and Roy, who are going to be our scoring tandem. We just need the rim protector blocker guy. And we drafted Oden, and the 60 games that those three played together, Roy, Aldridge, and Oden, we won. We went, like, 50 and 10. But it was over the course of 3 years. So. Yeah. And like, really, I feel like people like to look at Portland and be like, how could you not see KD was going to, like, no, we knew KD was going to be a great, we didn't think he was probably going to be like the scoring champion, one of the three best players in the league for a decade, but we knew he was going to be a great guy.
Well, but at the set, like, when he came out of college, he was 6'7" and a 150.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, I thought he was going to get destroyed destroyed by people.
Draft workouts don't matter to me. But I remember that year specifically, people were like, this guy versus this guy, Oden versus Durant, who would you pick? Oden did like 40 bench reps of like 180. Kevin Durant was the only guy in the draft who did zero. Zero. Like, obviously that doesn't matter now. He's having an all-time career type guy. But like, at the time, you can't, I don't know. Sam Bowie you can hold against Portland because it's just like, really? Sam Bowie? Like Jordan in North Carolina, you didn't look his way. But I don't know, I'll defend the Oden pick forever. It was the right pick to make. Like, obviously in retrospect, every draft can be redone better by everyone. Hawks.
I want to answer your question before we end. And who's what's going to be the biggest free agency splash? I don't know who's going to make it, but either... Oh, this could be interesting. What if there's a straight-up trade Howard for Cousins? One of those two guys, wherever from, they end up.
From is Houston gonna... to Sacramento.
Oh, my God.
How far Dwight Howard has fallen. I don't know.
I want Howard back in Orlando. Just go to the East.
He's going to end up somewhere. He's not going to be back in Houston. So
I think there's like a 70% chance he goes back to Orlando. But I think that other 30% is mostly Portland. And I really invite, not just to be funny or a homer on the radio, but I do believe that if Portland landed Dwight Howard, they would overpay him. They'd give him the max contract. He's not that type of guy anymore, but he deserves that because of being that guy for so many years. So they're going to give him like $30 million a year. Whatever. We've got the money. Paul Allen's got the money, even if the team doesn't have the money. But to have somebody we can run the pick and roll with several times a game, instead of once a game, which is what Houston averaged with him because Harden and Howard did not play together well, and having a defensive presence in there, I think it does turn Portland into a championship contender. I honestly believe that in as unbiased
somebody
of a way as I can
Logan's
be. And I know I was talking
let,
to you guys about this.
Let him have his dream.
It's like the really hot girl that all of your friends in your friend group have dated and been like, yo, man, she's bad news. Like, I thought it was going to be great because look at her. And then we started dating. And I tell you what, it was a nightmare the whole time. Like, the Lakers did it. Houston did it. Orlando didn't really, because Orlando was like her like high school guy. But, like, they've all been warning Portland, like, yo, man, I know it sounds great on paper. But, like, once they, it's just, it'll ruin it for everyone. and Portland,
which is why he's going to end up in New York.
Right. And Portland is like... It, like again, Portland is saying like we understand what you're saying, but we still want a chance. We still think it's a good idea, despite everything rational. Like other people we know have been down this road, but sometimes you just gotta make your own mistakes. You know, it's worth it. Maybe it's not. It's a lot
of
money.
In the immortal words of Pat Benatar, love is a battlefield. It's not supposed to be easy.
You gotta take a chance. Portland, the biggest free agent Portland has ever landed was Andre Miller. At some point, to get a championship back in Portland, you gotta make the big free agency move. And it's not gonna be through the draft. You don't have a couple years to develop someone. You gotta get good now, or you're gonna waste Lillard's 4 or 5 years left in Portland, in the prime of his career. Like you have to do it now. Pay him the money. Roll the dice on Dwight Howard. I can't believe I've drank the Dwight Howard juice, but I think that'll end up being the biggest move of the offseason when the Blazers are your 2017 NBA champions.
Good luck.
I didn't plan my outfit today either. This all just happened.
That's all you own. That's a Wes Matthews.
I still love you, Wes. I still love Wes Matthews.
He doesn't even play in that division anymore.
I still love him. I would have taken the money, too. They offered him, what, like $14 million a year? We were going to give him like 10, maybe. We didn't even offer him because we knew he was going to get a bigger offer somewhere else. Anyway, that's what I think. That's what I think.
What do you think is the biggest free agency move of the year?
I mean, I think wherever Dwight Howard ends up may end up being the biggest. I'm not, you know... That's the biggest that's visible right now. If KD does opt out and go somewhere other than Oklahoma City, I think that's far and away the biggest signing that'll happen. But it'll be interesting to see. I think there'll be a lot of fun stuff that goes on today before the draft or during the draft.
Yeah,
I think the biggest move is Luke Walton hires Kobe Bryant as his bench assistant.
Not free agency. Not free agency, but I still think the Cavaliers are going to do something with Kevin Love.
Really?
Yeah.
Kevin Love, come to LA.
To be honest, I hope it's to somewhere like LA and not to Portland. He's a Lake Oswego guy, so he's a hometown guy in Oregon. I don't want him. Which is I know it's weird after pining after Dwight Howard just now, but I hope he doesn't go to Portland. I don't want to pay a ton of money for Kevin Love. We've had our share of just big, slower past the prime of their career, white guy centers, and they're honestly, for Kevin Love's sake, I don't want him to get knee cancer in Portland, which is what every big white center does. He would go the way of Arvydas Sabonis, except he was never the player Sabonis was.
Oh, speaking of the draft, Sabonis' kid's going up in the rank. Like,
I love him. That's maybe
they've got him all the way up at 9 to Toronto now.
Yeah.
I can love him now because wasn't he a Gonzaga guy?
Yeah,
hated him in Gonzaga, can't stand him, but now I love him. We tend to end this show with me hating a different team every week. This week it's Gonzaga. I hate you, Gonzaga. All right. I think that's the final word from everybody. Thanks so much for everyone who's listening to Aggie Sports Radio. As always, thanks for joining us, the real T.O.
Big time, Tim and Jim.
We appreciate having you on here. Tristan Boyce,
I'm you Logan like Jones. That.
We're going to leave you with some Tupac again like last week. Have a good day.
We're going to do this every week. It's just me against the world.